This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. The U.S. Supreme Court finished business for the term this morning with two long-awaited decisions. One affects labor unions. The other, the so-called Hobby Lobby case, deals with what the federal government can require from small privately held companies. The High Court decided in a 5-4 vote that some companies will not have to pay for their employees' birth control through company-sponsored health plans. Several local businesses were pleased by that decision. Jim Michel is co-owner and co-founder of Electric Mirror, an Everett-based company. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing there?
I'm fine. You filed an amicus brief to this lawsuit. Why?
Well, we have a unique story. My brother was saved from an abortion clinic and was adopted by my parents. We've always been a pro-life company, and we just value protecting the most innocent among us. So we wanted to stand for life and thought it was important to file the brief.
So how do you feel about this morning's Supreme Court decision?
Oh, I woke up very excited. My sister was at the Supreme Court steps today and sent me a bunch of photographs, and we're very happy about the decision. For us, we believe it, you know, not only protects our rights, but really every business owner's rights in America. You could decide if you want coverage for abortion, or you could decide if you don't want coverage. I think it's part of the American experiment, and it makes sense to me.
It's not just abortion, though. It's birth control specifically. Do your health care policies in place at Electric Mirror cover birth control for your employees?
They do. It does cover birth control. However, it does not cover the abortion inducing drugs that sometimes are considered birth control.
So how will this Supreme Court ruling today affect those health care policies that you have in place?
Well, we're hoping that at this point we're not forced to cover birth control pills that cause abortions. So we do have a request into our carrier right now, hoping that they join the Supreme Court and recognize the decision, and we're not forced to cover those pills.
Jim, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Hey, I really appreciate it.
Jim Michel is co-owner and co-founder of Electric Mirror, an Everett-based company. Not everybody was so happy with the decision. Christine Charbonneau is CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Greater Northwest. She thinks it's unbelievable that in 2014 people are still fighting over women's access to birth control.
It's purely about trying to make access to something difficult, and that's why this is so disappointing. This pretends to be about all kinds of technical matters in the Constitution and people's right to religion, but what they've done here is entirely trumped an individual's right.
Christine Charbonneau, CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Greater Northwest. Well, here to help us sort out what's what is Marcia Coyle. She's chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Let's start with that Hobby Lobby case. Were you surprised by the ruling?
I don't think so. I was at the oral arguments in the case, and it seemed pretty clear, one, that the court was going to be divided, and also that the five conservative members of the court were leaning in favor of Hobby Lobby. In fact, at one point during the oral arguments, Chief Justice John Roberts noted to the government's lawyer, well, why can't we just say that this applies to closely held corporations? So in a way, he almost signaled the direction that at least he was interested in taking.
Justice Ginsburg wrote and delivered a passionate 35-page dissent. She delivered it from the bench. What did she say?
Well, first of all, she disagreed that under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that corporations could exercise religion. She did not believe that the act extended to corporations. When it was passed by Congress, she said it had a much more limited purpose. So she started from that premise. And then she went on to say that by giving that law such an expansive reading, the court was opening up a host of Me Too issues. She predicted that we would see corporations attempting to use the argument that their religious beliefs were being violated to opt out of other generally applicable federal laws. And not just other sort of medical-related issues, but that they would try to opt out of discrimination in employment laws, laws affecting, say, spousal benefits for lesbian, gay people. So she saw this as really opening the door to a lot of unnecessary litigation because the law was clear that it did not apply to corporations. And she disagreed that the decision by the majority was a restrained decision, that it would only apply to closely held corporations and to the contraceptive requirement in ACCA. She said there really was no difference in the rationale that the majority used here between a closely held corporation and other kinds of corporations.
I'm speaking with Marcia Coyle, who is chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. And listening to you, I'm imagining we could spend an hour and a half parsing both Chief Justice Roberts' comments and Justice Ginsburg's comments. There were a couple other separate dissents and separate assents. But I want to talk about the other case, a decision that was handed down in a 5-4 ruling. The court decided that home health care workers are not required to pay union dues, even if they stand to benefit from the union. Who does this ruling affect?
Well, it definitely affects those health care workers in the state of Illinois who objected to this particular union's representation and the fees that were charged. It may also affect other public employee unions, non-union members, depending on how they're viewed. The court here said that these particular employees weren't full-fledged public employees, that really their employer were their customers who decided when they were to work, who to hire, and who to fire. And because of that, they could not rely on, I think it goes back to 1977, a 1977 Supreme Court decision that held that non-union members did have to contribute to the cost of collective bargaining by the union that's been chosen to represent them. And that ruling was based, it said, well, yeah, there is a First Amendment cost here to this, but it also prevents what they call free riders, that is, employees who don't belong to the union getting all the advantages of collective bargaining, but not contributing to the cost of it. Justice Alito, who wrote the majority opinion today, did not overrule that old decision, but he really, really narrowed its reach and said that the First Amendment rights of these non-union members are violated. He called it an indignity to be required to pay when they really aren't full-fledged public employees. So it's a little hard at this point, to be honest, to know how broad this is going to be read, but I have a feeling that you're going to see more litigation over this. This case was brought by an organization that has long fought these agency fees. It's the Right to Work Foundation. And a number of states have already enacted right-to-work laws, but I think we're going to see a bigger push now. And this is really this has a huge effect on unions themselves because they do rely on these fees from their own members as well as non-union members in order to go forward with collective bargaining negotiations.
I'm speaking with National Law Journal Chief Washington Correspondent Marcia Coyle, and we're curious how today's ruling might affect Washington state workers. The Service Employees International Union represents almost 44,000 home health care workers here. Jackson Holtz, a spokesperson for SEIU Local 775. Hi, Jackson.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us on.
So big question, how will this ruling affect the home health care workers here in Washington?
Well, as you just heard from the reporter, we're still analyzing the decision, and I think it's yet to be we're looking at just whether or not it does impact home health care workers here in the state of Washington. We see a great distinction here in Washington between the Illinois Medicaid Home Care Personal Assistance Program and the Washington Individual Provider Program. And so, you know, what we do know is that here in Washington, home care workers will continue to stand with low-wage workers here in Washington and with low-wage workers around the country. Our commitment to lifting workers out of poverty doesn't change with today's ruling.
Jackson, why wouldn't it apply to Washington's 44,000 home health care workers?
Well, what we're looking at is the distinction. And here in Washington, what we know is that we have a far more robust collective bargaining model than they do in Illinois. And what that means is that over the past decade that we've been working to organize the home health care workers here in the state, that they've been able to earn and win a number of benefits. And that distinction is really innumerable, but I can give you a couple of examples.
I don't have a lot of time. Before you give me the examples, I'm kind of curious. Just because they have a better contract means that this wouldn't apply?
Well, it means that we still need to study it and learn. That partial state employee that your expert talked about, that Justice Alito outlined in his opinion, when it appears to apply to this Illinois case, and to the Illinois home care workers. Those workers don't have any of, or don't have many of the rights that home care workers here in the state of Washington do have.
Jackson Holt, spokesperson for SEIU Local 775, representing nearly 44,000 home health care workers in Washington. Thanks for speaking with us.
Sure, thank you.
And Marcia Coyle of National Law Journal, I want to come back to you for a final question. We heard about these two rulings. These are the last two of this particular session. What did we learn about the Roberts Court this term?
Well, I think overall, if you looked at all of the decisions, you would see an unprecedented amount of unanimity on the court. I think, you know, well over 50% of the decisions were unanimous. But at the same time, as these final two decisions show, even within last week's unanimous opinions on the recess appointment clause and abortion clinic buffer zone, there remain deep, deep divisions among the court, often deep ideological divisions within the court. And these cases are not always predictable. They're hard cases, but I would take away from this that sometimes the more liberal side of the bench wins, more often than not the conservative side of the bench wins, but still the deep divisions exist, and yet despite that, these justices can come together on a host of issues and find unanimity.
Marcia Coyle, Chief Washington Correspondent for the National Law Journal, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care now.
You too.